Now, we're looking at Exodus chapter 5 and 6 today. Now, I want to start with a little story, and it's sort of, it is a true story, and I'm speaking from my heart, and some people might laugh, even verbally. I was travelling down Blaxland Road last year, and there was a guy in my bumper bar just pestering me, right up close. And I was in the middle lane, because there were parked cars periodically in the left-hand lane. I just don't like going in and out and in and out, and it's a nuisance. I feel that's more dangerous. So I was sitting on 60, I wasn't 50, but I was sitting on 60, and I knew there was a camera coming up. And so I pulled across, when the camera was just, the speed camera was coming up, it's one of those fixed ones. I pulled across to the left because there was a stretch where there was no parked cars, and the guy was still there. Anyway, I was doing 60, I checked, I knew it was all happening. And this guy pulled out and passed and shot past. And I looked in the rear vision mirror to see if there was any flash, and I didn't pick anything up, but I did get a letter saying you've exceeded the speed limit. Stagger me, I thought I did everything right. I checked, I made sure I wasn't going over 60, and I don't know the technology, but it seems that he went past, and he clicked the camera, and I was in the shot as well. I don't know if he got his. Anyway, I wrote it, I was miffed, you know. I think that's normal, isn't it? And so I sent a letter off, and I was very courteous, and I signed it Andrew Collins, JP, or spelled it out, just not JP, Justice of the Peace, which I am. So I spelled it all out and sent it off and waited. And I got a nice letter back saying, no, we've checked the records, and we're going to put on caution. We've dropped the charge. No, they didn't say they dropped the charge. We're not going to fine you and lose your demerit points, but you're on caution. I thought, oh, man. I still didn't do it, you know? But I thought I'd let it go because I didn't have time to fuss around and get the photo and all that rest. And so at the moment I'm cautioned because of what I've explained to you. But I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you've tried to do everything right and things go wrong. Ever been in that situation? You think, I'm going to nail this one this time, I'm going to get it right. And it just, something goes wrong. Now, I don't know if you've read through, you're probably looking through this with others. But how about Moses? Now he's there on the backside of the desert looking after sheep one day, and God says, I want you to go and lead my people. And so he said, okay, I'll do that, God. So he heads back to the promised land and he starts leading his people. But what happens? They don't want to go. And Pharaoh makes it pretty hard, doesn't he? And I wondered if Moses didn't scratch his head a few days and say, hey, listen, hang on, God, you put me into this position. You want me to lead these people out and get them into another country. And you want me to take them from Egypt. I think I said promised land before, didn't I? You wanted me to get them from Egypt to the promised land. Hang on, it's getting pretty hard here. You know? And I wonder if he wasn't a bit like that, because he goes to Pharaoh and said, listen, we want to go and have a festival. We want you to go, let us go for a few days. And Pharaoh said, who is God that I should listen to him? Who is he? Why should I do that? Why should I let you people go? And even the people weren't really excited about following Moses, were they? Now there was a little incident even before he went down to the desert saying, you know, who is this guy? He's murdered somebody. But you see here, I find so many valuable lessons in this passage. It's been a thrill as I've looked at this. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, this is what the Lord says. The Lord God of Israel says, let my people go so that we may hold a festival to me in the desert. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. In actual fact, what happens? He says, I want you to make the same number of bricks, but you've got to get your own straw to bind it all together. Now that didn't really make the people very happy, did it? No, Moses really, they had a tough enough life as it was. And then Moses goes and speaks to Pharaoh, and lo and behold, he comes out worse off. Okay. Is it any wonder the people got a bit cross with Moses? You know?
You're supposed to come and make our life a bit easier. But you made it much harder. And verse 22, Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon the people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble upon this people. And you have not rescued your people at all. Now I. Moses is a bit down in the dumps, isn't he? You know, and as I think, I've been doing a lot of thinking about leadership over the last 12 months. And it's tough. Leading. Moses, here he was as a leader. And he was meant to lead his people. And things weren't going real well. Not a good start, is it? Not a good start. If he, you know, with our politicians, after the first 100 days, they do a bit of an assessment. Say, what's happened in the first 100 days? The first 100 days of Moses wasn't looking real good, was it? And so the feeling of rejection. Here he is, feeling rejected as a leader. God had called him, he was feeling rejected. And some of the emotions go through that. I'm not sure if you've ever been in that position there. Feeling rejected, why am I doing this? Not wanting to do it. Suddenly all this stuff comes in. I have a trouble when I make a decision. You know, this week I'm doing some work on the backyard and I ordered some timber for the back deck. Now, as soon as I made it and placed the order, stuff started running through my mind. Have you done the right thing? And you feel you haven't ordered too much. You feel you want to go ahead with it. That happens in my mind. Whenever I make a decision, these doubts come in. Now, maybe Moses is a bit like that as well. He made this call. And now he is beginning to doubt it. So that seems to come through in verse 22. The idea of rejection comes through a lot. I'm sure it's something we've had from time to time. I'd just like to read a little bit from a book that's close to me. I had a paper round. When I was 11 years old, it was one of the more difficult routes, sprinkled with milk farms, rural homes, and smatterings of hills, but the money was good for a child. My parents allowed me to keep my earnings to buy the non-essentials of life, stereo records, tape recorders, etc. My family's lower middle class income had very little room for non-necessities. My monthly income forced me to learn about delayed gratification, savings accounts, and other nuances of capitalism. One ordinary Tuesday, while cruising downtown in my bicycle, I passed by a music store and skidded to a halt. There in the window, standing all by itself, was the most beautiful conga drum I'd ever seen. It was almost as tall as me, and I could not take my eyes off its barrel-shaped beauty, dark and white, alternated around the laminated exterior. A round crane frame stretched the thick animal skin tightly over the top of the drum. It was 1953, and an 11-year-old boy could not resist the allure of such a drum. $20 was a lot of money in those days, but I had $20 in my savings. Before the day was over, I purchased a conga drum, brought it home, and proudly showed it to all my friends. None of us knew how to play any kind of drum. But it didn't stop us from pretending to be the most rhythmically talented group of boys in the world. And then my father arrived home from work. Anxious to show him my new purchase, I pranced in the kitchen, beating on my drum as loud as I could, beaming from ear to ear. Where did you get that? My dad said sharply. I hesitated. I bought it with my paper about money. Dad, it's a conga drum. It's beautiful. I was proud. His harshness continued. How much did you pay for it? $20, I said meekly, still waiting for him to share my excitement and joy. $20? I was not prepared for his anger. I stood there stupidly while my new drum slowly slid from my side under the kitchen floor. Nothing but silence. Deadening words I will never forget. Take it back. We'll come back to the story a bit later. So here we have in this first part of the story the setting where Moses and is to lead his people, he's been before Pharaoh, and then Pharaoh says, no, you're going to make more hay and to reinforce it. And then Moses talks to God at the end of chapter 5. And then as we look on, we go down in verse 2, God said to Moses, I'm the Lord, I appear to Abraham and to Isaac. So in this passage here, God is speaking to Moses and saying, hey, listen, I am the same God who dealt with Abraham. He led Abraham, I can lead you guys too. I also established my covenant in verse 4 with them to give them to the land of Canaan where they lived as aliens. Moreover, I have heard the groanings of the Israelites, whom the Egyptians are enslaved, and I am remembering my covenant. Therefore, say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians, I will free you from the slaves, I will bring you without steps out, I will take you as my own people. Then you know that I am the Lord, who brought you out from under the yoke of Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham and Isaac. Moses reported this to Israel, but they did not listen to him because of his discouragement and cruel bondage. And the Lord said to Moses, go tell Pharaoh. What a tough job leadership is. What a tough job leadership is. There we find God is enthusing and saying, now listen to Moses, we can do this. Abraham did it, you can do it. And I've heard the cry of your people. It's come to me that the people have been here 430 years here in Egypt, and it's been tough for them, and I want to get them out. And so Moses listens to this, and he says, okay, I'll go back to the children of Israel. So he goes back to the Israelites and says, hey, listen, this is what God says. And what do they do? They say, sorry, buddy, not interested. Why? Because they were discouraged. Because they were discouraged and cruel bondage. You know, it's just interesting. Those who have no feeling of escape, it's hard to accept. You know, all of us, I'm quite sure, have areas where we can make choices. We can choose to go to shops. We can choose to make decisions in our life that affect us. There are some people who are poor, aliens, refugees in our world. It's their choice. Where can they have choices? A lot of the decisions are made for them. And that's very disempowering. And see what happens here? Here's these people, they're oppressed. They're put down. They've got to cut the straw as well as make the bricks now. And what does it say here? Because of their discouragement and cruel bondage. That's so sad. Of all the people in the world, God's people here in Egypt should be free. But they're in bondage. Of all the people in the world, then, here in 2004, we should be liberated. We should have a spirit of being liberated. Because Jesus has been freedom. Jesus has been free. But oppression just brings us down. So those we need as people, you know, as we look through the Bible, we see lots of regarding the people who are oppressed. The aliens, the widows, and the whole group of people. The fatherless, whole group of people there, who we as Christians should have a heart for. Right? Listening to their cry, listening to them, so that their voices are heard. But Moses said, the Lord said, Israelites will not listen to me. Why should Pharaoh listen to me? Since I speak with faltering lips. So, and then comes in a very interesting section here. And I'm not going to go through it. Other than to say this, there's all these names. And as you look, you can construct the family tree from Abraham through to Moses and Aaron. And that's it. To affirm to Moses and to the children of Israel, this is God's man. This is an important man. You know, I don't know, I get around to quite a few different churches and assemblies and things like that. But it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. And it hit me most when we moved to England in 1992. I went into this assembly in Nottingham for the first time, and I had my letter of commendation that Mr. Jack Torrance had written. And being in a mess, that's brethren, so I went there with this really good letter at that time. Like, now he's from England, and so it was just did the thing. And, you know, it was just fascinating, because we did exactly this. We know exactly this. Because here, God is saying, this guy has a right lineage. He has a right to be the leader. And there I was with this letter, and I was completely accepted within the assembly, which is really the purpose of the letter, of commendation. Here I was visiting another country. And yet, you know, there are other people in that church who come from other church traditions who were really very, very godly. They walked with God as far across their mind, but they weren't accepted because they didn't have the right lineage. And I just think we really need to be very fascinating. So when we do go, I visit other assemblies, and all I do is say what my links are within the connection, and I just feel an instant acceptance. That's very, very interesting. So what I'm saying is, what's happening here in the latter part of chapter 6 is exactly what happened in our community. Right? It does happen. I think it's worthwhile just noting that. All right, then. And so it was this, there at the end of chapter 6 it says, it was the same Aaron and Moses whom the Lord said, bring the Israelites out of Egypt by their division. They were the ones who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, about bringing his life out of Egypt. It was the same Moses and the same Aaron. You know, there it was, saying after all this family records, this is the guy who's going to lead the people. These are the guys, Moses and Aaron, are going to lead you out of this country, and they deserve your respect. I'll leave 28, those last couple of verses, to the next speaker, because they're attached to chapter 7. So what can we learn from today's story? What can we learn from today's incident in the Bible? Firstly, I just think there's a lot to learn about leading. Leading is not easy. Leading is hard work. And I've been reading all sorts of stuff. Once a month I meet with my staff and we have an ad just on leading. Leadership, developing leaders, because I believe it's important. International Teams in Australia is hosting an international leadership forum in May next year for all the IT leaders. It's really important we train our leaders. It's really important to identify leaders and train them. But it's hard work. I don't know. Some people ring me up and say, how's it going, Andrew? Well, the thing is, you don't go into leadership for no problems. All right? You're in leadership and you can expect problems because that's part of the deal, of working issues through and things like that. It goes with the territory. So don't go into leadership and not expect difficulties to work through. That's it. But also, a question comes to me too. And it's a question I have of the Israelites as well as us Aussies, because I see a lot of similarities between the Aussies and the Israelites. Because us Aussies are really funny with leaders. We put them down as part of our history. You know, we didn't respect authority when we first came. All those convicts who came, you know, they didn't respect the authorities. They despised them. They were the police. They were the jailers and all that. They didn't respect them. And part of that is inbuilt into us. And so, you know, whereas you go to America and there they have huge statues to leaders. We don't have any statues to leaders. And so there's no statues to war heroes. US has got lots of them. In the Australian War Memorial, we'll have Simpson and his donkey. You know, and we know the story there. And so what I'm saying is, I see a lot of similarities between the Israelites and how they didn't really follow Abraham, the leaders, very well, and us Aussies. There's a lot of similarities. Making it really difficult for the leaders? I think there's a challenge here. Because to me, so often, we get so caught up and make life for leaders so difficult. Now, Paul speaks in his epistles regarding the care of the churches. It's a heavy burden. And yes, it always will be. But as followers, I think it's really important that whoever I am following as a leader, I shouldn't be making it extraordinarily difficult for them. Or even difficult. I should be trying to say, how can I help? How can I help in this situation? Rather than trying to be adverse in it. So I think there's an important question there. So how are we doing as followers in that whole thing? But then there's another thing. The whole thing of God speaking to us. Because as I look through the life of Moses, God and Moses did a lot of talking, didn't they?
They did a lot of talking. There were good times and there were hard times. There were the times when I was just thinking this morning, what sort of voice did God use to Moses when he said, I want you to put that rod out across that sea and see it divide? Amen? What sort of voice did God use to Moses on the mountain when the people down at the bottom of the mountain were worshipping the calf? Hey, listen, you better get down there real quick because these guys aren't doing what they should be doing. But what is the voice of God's? What was the tone of voice God used to Moses when Moses didn't speak to the rock but hid it? Or when God said to Moses, "You can't see the promised land." Now, how are we listening to God? Are we allowing space in our lives for God to speak to us? To listen. And the whole idea of being rejected and not hearing. Because to me, as we look through the life of Moses, God was so gracious. That's what I see. God is so gracious. And in our lives today, God is a gracious God. He cares us. He cares for us. Even though Moses did a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't real smart and he struggled. And yet God just nurtured him along and he led that large crowd of people from Egypt to the promised land, or to the River Jordan anyway. Let me just continue the story because I think it's important. At a recent retreat with my oldest son, the conga drum experience resurfaced. Late one evening, in the middle of the retreat, I told the story to my son for the first time. The scar on my soul still remained. On the final day of the retreat, just before communion, I led a short devotional. Although I had prepared a few notes, the talk was mostly spontaneous, and the story of the congregation spilled out of me as an illustration of something I was talking about. Neither my son nor I had expected the story to be told. When I finished, I sat to prepare for communion. The hushed chapel reflected our anticipation of the sacrament. The long silence continued. Without warning, my son stomped to the front of the chapel, making an unusual amount of noise. He certainly grabbed everybody's attention. After loudly marching up the stairs to the platform, he disappeared behind a large oak podium and started rustling through papers and cardboard, searching for something. Suddenly he turned to face the audience. Holding in his hands a large, shiny new conga drum. He marched forward and placed the conga drum on his altar. Tears filled my eyes as I sat there, stunned. Is this for me? Can I keep the conga drum? Logic insisted that although this was a beautiful gesture from my son, it really wasn't mine to keep. How could it be? He didn't have any idea I was going to talk about that drum. I know, he must have remembered a conga drum in the storage room backstage and spontaneously decided it would be a great way to close the service. Clearly it was not mine to keep, so I did not reach for the drum. I wasn't about to have it taken back again. I will never forget what happened next. From the back of the room I heard the words, "Take the conga drum." Slowly I rose to the altar and stared through the tears at the most beautiful conga drum I'd ever seen. I did not pick it up. I surrounded it with my arms and hugged it off the altar. My son told me later he was going to tell the story and present me with a drum. But when I started telling the story, he realised God had orchestrated the morning far beyond anyone's expectations. On the top of the bookcase, behind me sits the conga drum. 47 years is a long time to wait. But the waiting is over. Each time I looked at it, my heart laughs over a God who conspired to make sure I understood forever his fathomless grace. Every day I hear him whisper, "I'll never take back my grace." You know, as we look through the story of Moses, as we see how God dealt graciously with him at all points, I hope you can see how God is at work in your life. He doesn't want to take back his grace. He's not that sort of God. He gives freely and liberally. And in the same way, the author, Michael Yaconelli, didn't want to give the conga drum back. We can hang on to the grace that God gives. And as we look through Moses, as we think of his rejection and his hard life as a leader to lead this people, as we think of him trying to just get these people to do things as a group, as we think about his leadership, as we think about us as followers, I just pray that our lives are touched afresh by the life of Moses.